Hey friends, Landon here. Welcome to the Waterville Community Church Sunday Podcast.
Well, if you have not heard by now, we need to seriously rethink our communication strategy. But starting next Sunday, July the 5th, will be the first time that we will have people back in our building for in-person church services since, as you saw in the video, since mid-March. It's been almost 4 months since we've had anyone here gathering in person to worship together. And so kind of on the precipice of this new season that we've all been in, I wanted to pull back for a minute. We've been in this series that we're calling We Believe. We've been looking at the essentials of the Christian faith that have come down to us, been handed down to us in what we call the Apostles' Creed. And we're going to continue that series for quite a while, probably through the month of October. But this week, since next Sunday represents something of a transition in this season we've been in, I wanted to talk about it a little bit. I really haven't, since the first Sunday our doors were closed to in-person services, I haven't really talked about this experience that we've all been having surrounding the coronavirus and quarantining, and I thought this Sunday would be a good opportunity to do that, to do a few things. I want to reflect on where we've been over these last 4 months. I want to try to name where we are and where we're likely to be for a little while, at least for the near future, and then ultimately to try to envision together where we hope to be at some point. Now, to do that, I am a preacher after all, so I'm going to appeal to a story in the Bible. It often goes by the name the Exile, or the story of exile. If you're not familiar with that story, I'm going to try to give you a synopsis of the history of the people of Israel and the first three quarters of the Bible in about 2 minutes. So the same God that we've been talking about, this God who is Father, Creator of heaven and earth, at a point in ancient history chose a man named Abram. And he said to Abram, I'll make a promise to you. I'm going to give you a lot of descendants, as numerous as the stars in the sky and the sand on the seashore, for the purpose of blessing everyone through you. So I'm going to bless you with a lot of descendants, and then through you and all of your descendants, I've got good plans for the whole world and for all of my people. So he chooses Abram. Eventually, Abram has a kid. Abram's kid has a kid. His kid has lots of kids. Eventually, there's a family of about 70 people, and they relocate to the nation of Egypt to avoid a famine. And they end up there for a little longer than they anticipated as they continue to populate, to grow in number. The king of Egypt, the Pharaoh, begins to get nervous that as they become so large a nation, that if they were ever to mobilize against him, he'd be in trouble. And so in a moment of insecurity, as political leaders often are, he takes a preemptive strike and he enslaves them, where they spend about 400 years as slaves in the nation of Egypt. Eventually, God rescues them, sends them a rescuer named Moses, who leads them out of slavery in Egypt and into a place that's often referred to as in the Bible as the land of promise or the promised land. But not before, on the way, constituting them, entering into a sort of covenantal agreement, basically turning them into a political nation. So God gives them a law and makes this covenantal arrangement, basically says, look, if you love me and you obey me, do the things that I'm telling you to do, you're going to live long and prosper. If you don't, things are not going to go well for you. And if you know the story, they sort of choose the latter. And they struggle to love God, they struggle to listen and obey, to trust God. And at a certain point in their history, after many, many attempts, countless attempts on God's part to redirect them, they persist. And what happens to them is that they are attacked by the military superpower at the time, the Empire of Babylon. Babylon attacks and destroys the city of Jerusalem. Most of its citizens were killed. And the ones who weren't killed were deported. They were taken as political prisoners to a foreign country where they spent about 70 years in political exile. Now, after that 70 years, And after a few regime changes, some of them were allowed to return home. They were given permission to leave Babylon and to come back to the nation of Israel, to the city of Jerusalem. And some of them took advantage of that opportunity and went. Others, for very good reason, did not. The ones who returned had an experience, and the language I'm going to use is the sort of joy mixed with sadness. On the one hand, they were certainly overjoyed to be out of political exile and back home. But on the other hand, they were sad. They were sad because not everybody was with them. Some of their loved ones, some of their friends and family members were still back in exile, so they were sad about that. But they were also sad that things weren't the way that they were when they left. Life wasn't the same. The city had been destroyed, the temple was in ruins. They recognized pretty quickly that they had some serious rebuilding to do if life were ever going to go back to normal, if it were ever going to look the way that it did. They had some work to do. Now, you could probably anticipate the parallels that I'm going to draw between their experience and ours based on the way that I told the story. Before I do that, let me just offer a couple of disclaimers. By choosing the story of exile, I am not in any way intending to imply, or certainly not to explicitly state, that the coronavirus or our experience of having to quarantine at home is in any way the direct result of God punishing humanity for failing to love and obey him. There are some Christian leaders who will make that claim. I think they're misguided. If you've been around for a while, you've probably heard me say this before, but you know our Bible is broken into two major parts, what we call our Old Testament and what we call the New Testament. Basically, the Old Testament is pre-Jesus, and the New Testament is the story of Jesus and sort of the first years post-Jesus. And one of the reasons that it's so important that we have the first part, what we call our Old Testament, which makes up about three-quarters of the book, one of the reasons I think it's so important for Christian people to have that, there are many reasons, but one of the reasons is because based on the way a lot of professing followers of Jesus think and speak, you would think we were still living in it. That you would think that we were still adopting the worldview that's consistent with this page of the book. Not realizing that three-quarters of the way through the book, something pretty monumental happened. God actually showed up in the person of Jesus Christ and things changed. We don't think the same way that people used to think just because it's in the pages of the Bible. So I don't think that the coronavirus or any of the suffering or misery that's going on in the world as a result of it is God punishing humanity for failing to love and obey God. Some Christian leaders will tell you that. I think they're misguided. Another thing that I'm not trying to imply, I recognize that some people have really suffered during this season. Some people have lost their lives. People have lost loved ones. People have lost jobs. They've struggled to feed their kids. There are people who are what I would call legitimately suffering because of the coronavirus and everything that's sort of transpired because of it. I don't know that I would call myself one of those people. In fact, I would say I'm not one of those people. And I'm guessing many of you, not all, and I want to be sensitive to those of you who fall in that camp that I just referenced, but many of you, this really has not been a season of suffering. It's certainly been inconvenient. It has certainly been non-preferred. But there's a big difference between 70 years of people living in forced political imprisonment and me having to stay inside of my house for 4 months where I have running water, cable TV, the internet, and I can have my groceries delivered to my front door. So some people have really struggled and suffered because of this season. A lot of us have been inconvenienced. And so by using the story of exile, I'm not in any way trying to say that 70 years of political imprisonment is somehow equivalent to what I've experienced the last 4 months. No analogy is perfect, obviously. I'm choosing exile for one reason. I think it gives us language to process and talk about our experience of displacement and now the prospect of return. Just as they were displaced and that had the opportunity to return and that return kind of went a certain way, That's the parallel I want to draw. We've been displaced. There's just no denying that. We've been displaced from our way of life, from our jobs, from our habits and rhythms, our recreational pursuits. We've been displaced from our place of worship. We've been displaced from many of our friends and our family members. And displacement is a trauma. It's a very real trauma. It has affected us, continues to affect us. Now, having said that, it hasn't been all bad. We believe in a God who brings life from death. And in this season, we've seen that happen. When the exiles were initially deported from the promised land to the nation of Babylon, after they suffered through and adjusted to the kind of initial shock of their displacement and the trauma and the suffering and everything that had happened, when they began to realize that they were not going home anytime soon, if ever, one of their prophets, a man named Jeremiah, came and gave them some advice. And this is what he writes in Jeremiah chapter 29. He says, "Build homes and plan to stay. Plant gardens and eat the food they produce. Marry and have children, then find spouses for them so that you may have many grandchildren. Multiply. Do not dwindle away, and work for the peace and prosperity of the city where I sent you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, for its welfare will determine your welfare." In short, what Jeremiah is saying is, life isn't over. Yes, we have suffered. Yes, we have undergone something that has been terrible. It has been non-preferred, but life isn't over. We're here. We're alive. And we have to somehow figure out how to make the most of it. We have to make homes, and we have to plant gardens, and we have to let our kids get married, and we have to continue to pray and seek the prosperity of the world in which we now live. That was his advice to them. And look, that's what we've been doing. For 4 months, we've been adapting and trying to make the most of non-preferred circumstances. And as you saw in the video, we've done a remarkable job. I mean, we've figured out how to do our jobs and educate our kids, kind of, at the same time. We have figured out how to stay in touch with our friends and our family members. We've had a few less activities to distract us. And so we've had a few more dinners together as families, or maybe just a lot of snacks. We've gotten creative about how to make time meaningful. Many of you caught up on home improvement projects that you've been putting off because you just didn't have time to do them. Or maybe you've started one that you haven't finished yet. Many of you have caught up on your photo albums and your scrapbooks. We've gotten to go to church in our pajamas. And don't think I don't know that some of you were still late. It hasn't been all bad. We've adapted. We've made the most of it. We've missed out on a lot. I know. There's no denying that. But I'm hoping that as you look back on this season, you might have some fond memories and maybe even some lessons that you can carry with you as life continues to reopen. We've adapted. We've made the most of it. But let's be honest. Exile is not our home. None of us would choose, I don't think, except maybe you extreme introverts, who I don't understand. I don't think any of us would choose to live this way. We know that we're made for face-to-face connection. We're made to be together. Technology is great. And it has enabled us to maintain a sense of connection when we couldn't physically be together. And I just want to take a second. I know this will embarrass him, but I want to take a second to publicly acknowledge Landon and all of the incredible hard work that he's done in the last 4 months. I think all of our staff has worked very hard to adapt and innovate and you know, as you saw in the video. But I think if you asked any one of us, we would all say that we've been living in the shadow that Landon's efforts has cast. If you're not a tech person, you have no appreciation for how hard it is to pull off something like this. And all of that weight has really fallen squarely on his shoulders. And not only do I think our live stream, you know, obviously has been possible, which would have been impressive enough, but it's been excellent. And that's been because of him. So if you have a chance to drop him a line, send him an email, call him, you know, buy a gift card, send he and Emily out to dinner or something, but make sure to thank him, because we wouldn't be doing any of this if it weren't for him. So technology is great. And it's allowed us to maintain a sense of connection when we couldn't physically be together. But technology, live streaming, being together digitally, it's not our true home. We're adapting, we're making the most of it, but let's be honest, many of us are not thriving. For all the good things that I just referenced, life has also been, it's been hard. Many of us are eating more, sleeping more, drinking more as a way of coping with the sadness or the uncertainty. Many of our relationships have suffered, either because just the difficulty and the confusion of this whole season has created a scenario where things you've done or not done have hurt other people, or vice versa. Or maybe you're just realizing how important it is to be together. Then when we're not physically together, that relationships suffer, they drift. It's just the way that it is. We haven't been able to visit prisons. We haven't been able to visit nursing homes. Adoptions have been delayed or postponed. Child services has struggled to place kids in foster placements or to monitor those placements. There's been news that child and spousal abuse is up in many places. Mental health concerns are a real issue. So we're adapting, we're making the most of it, but many of us are not thriving. That exile, quarantine, being apart from one another is not our true home. Being together is our true home. Being together is our true home. Church is not a sermon. It's not something you can download. It is a network of relationships. The way that the world knows that we're followers of Jesus Christ is by the way that we love one another, a love that is put on display when real people in real time gather in real space. I don't know where the world's going. I'm not much of a sci-fi guy, but let's imagine 20, 30, 50, 100 years from now, as the world continues to migrate a lot of its practices into the digital arena, who knows? Maybe the church will become known as that weird group of people who still get together. The author of Hebrews once said, "Let us not give up gathering. Let's not neglect our meeting together as some people do." Technology has made it possible for us to maintain a sense of connection when we physically couldn't be together. And we're going to continue to live stream our services indefinitely, not as a sort of equivalent alternative to gathering in person, but as a way to connect with the outside world, people who want to check our church out from a distance before they ever take the plunge and show up here in person on a Sunday. So we'll continue to do that. But my hope, and I hope your hope, is that we would be back in person together as soon as we can. Because being together is our true home. Now, I recognize that as soon as we can, it's going to be different for everybody. It's going to be different for everybody. In the story of the exile, some people left Babylon and went back to Jerusalem as soon as the power structure said they could, gave them permission to do it. Some of you will be here next week. You will be here in person next Sunday because the power structure of the church gave you permission to do that. And when the exiles returned from Babylon to Jerusalem, it was risky. They were making a risky decision. They were risking a long, very difficult, very dangerous journey. And if they made it, they were running the risk of the total unknown of what they would find when they actually got there. But they were willing to assume the risk. They were at a place where they were ready to assume that risk. One of the reasons that as a church leadership, we decided to reopen our doors to invite people back in for in-person services next Sunday was because we got to a place where we realized that based on the data available, more time is not going to mitigate the risk. A week from now, a month from now, 2 months from now, it's simply not going to be less risky to gather. And some people are ready to assume the risk. And as a church leadership community, we didn't want to continue to tell them that they didn't have permission to do that. So next Sunday is an opportunity for some people to return in person because that's as soon as they can. For other people, as soon as we can isn't going to be next Sunday. And it may not be the Sunday after that or the Sunday after that. Look, I've heard from people, and I am sensitive to these stories. If you're a grandparent and you haven't seen your grandkids in months, and you've got an opportunity coming up soon to be with your grandkids, but your son or daughter is asking you to kind of restrict your contact with other people so that you can do that, don't come here. Don't be here next Sunday. Don't risk that. Don't risk the chance to be with your grandkids you haven't seen. You know, maybe your parents who have kids in your home, and you're worried either that your kid's going to rub snot on the back of somebody else's chair, or you're worried your baby might get sick. We get it. It's probably wise for you to not be here. It's okay to not be here. I know you know that, but I want you to hear me say it. It's okay to not be here. That's probably a wise choice. Some of you, maybe you have unique health concerns. And let's be honest, the gathering as a church, it's unpredictable. I don't know who's going to be here next week. It's an unpredictable social environment, and it may exceed your comfort level right now, and that's okay. It's okay to not be here. As soon as we can is going to be different for everyone, but I'm hoping that everyone is thinking as soon as we can. As soon as we can is going to be different for everyone, but I'm hoping everyone is thinking as soon as we can. Because it's that shared hope, that shared perspective that is going to sort of fortify us, galvanize us together to navigate what is going to be the unique challenge of this next season. Right, when we first closed the doors to in-person gatherings, everyone was, for the most part, right, more or less on the same page. We all recognized, based on the data that was coming and how fast things were changing and sort of the issues that were coming out from governing authorities, political, health leaders, whatever, that we needed to close the doors. We recognized it was a hard thing, that it was going to usher us into a season of just that was going to be unpredictable and difficult. It was non-preferred circumstances, but we all kind of got that we needed to do it. And so we banded together and we sucked it up and we did it. And everybody was more or less on the same page. That's not the case today. That season has changed. People are on very different pages about things right now. Some of you are thrilled that we're opening the doors next week. Some of you are not. What I'm hoping is that if everybody is on the same page of as soon as we can, knowing that as soon as we can is simply going to be different for different people, that those of you who choose not to be here next Sunday or in future Sundays, that you will be happy for people who can be here. And for those of you who choose to be here next Sunday or future Sundays, that you will look forward to the day when everybody can be back together. Because all of us are thinking as soon as we can. We want to be together. That's what I'm hoping. So having said all of that, next week is not and should not be viewed as some big celebration. It is simply the beginning of our return. Next Sunday represents the first opportunity that you have permission to return to this building for in-person services on Sunday if you want or when you're ready. It's the beginning of a process. Like the return, that first wave of returning exiles, it is going to be, I am bracing myself for, I think you ought to brace yourself for, it's going to be an experience of joy mixed with sadness. I'm anticipating that all of us, and in some ways I'm hoping that all of us have something of an experience of joy. That for those of you who choose not to be here, that you will experience joy for the members of your family who can be here, choose to be here. And for those of you who obviously choose to be here, I hope walking back through the doors of this building and being in this room for a service brings you a sense of joy. But on some level, I hope that we're all a little sad too. I hope for those of you who are here that there will be a sense of sadness because not everyone will be here. And things are not going to be what they were. Not initially, maybe not ever. And that's going to come with a sense of sadness. For those of you who are at home, who choose not to be here next week or in future weeks, I hope there's that sense of sadness that you want to be, that you wish you could be. But circumstances are what they are, and it just doesn't permit it right now. So next Sunday is just the beginning of a process of return. And it's going to be an experience of joy mixed with sadness for all of us. I don't know how long it's going to last. But eventually, we're going to have to start talking about rebuilding. Right? When that first wave of exiles returned to Jerusalem, it didn't take them long to realize life is not what it was. And they had to commit themselves to a process of rebuilding. If they ever wanted life to kind of go back to what it was or to even begin to feel somewhat normal again. And look, for those of you who choose to return next week or in near weeks, you're going to realize things are not what they were. I imagine for a very long time we're going to have a depleted volunteer team, which is going to have an impact on what we can do and what we can't do, and that's okay. You're going to realize that the physical building is different, where literally, you can't see it on camera right now, but the whole sanctuary has been torn up because we're remodeling it. And Dana and her team are doing a fantastic job, but it's different. Things aren't what they were. And I don't yet know what it's going to take to get us back to some semblance of normalcy. And as I said, the very first sermon when we entered into this quarantine process, I don't know that normalcy is what we want. I don't know that going back to the way things were is the right thing for us to do. In fact, I'm pretty confident it's not. That if we believe in a God who brings life from death, who ushers in new possibilities through these kind of non-preferred circumstances, then we have to believe God has something for us. So our rebuilding phase isn't just going to be, hey, how do we get people plugged back into the things that we used to be doing so that we can get back to the things that we used to be doing, the way we used to do them? It's going to be a process. We're going to have to figure out what about our shared life together we want to retain and why. We're going to have to make decisions about things that we feel like we can remove. And then we're going to have to rethink a lot of things so that even things we choose to retain, we might end up doing them very differently. Next week represents the first Sunday in a process of returning that's going to usher us into a season of rebuilding, of figuring out what to retain, what to remove, and what things we just need to rethink and do differently. Because the goal is not to just put people back in this building and do a set of things. Ultimately, what we envision is reunion. To move beyond just return and rebuilding to reunion. And by reunion, I don't mean back to the way things were. I mean everybody together. The word for church in the New Testament, ekklesia, it often gets translated as church. What it really means is assembly. It means congregation. It means a gathering. I just want us all back together. We'll figure out where we're going and how we're going to get there. We have a mission. We are a gathering of people with a purpose to produce people who love God and love people. Being together, gathering, assembling is central to our identity. We haven't been able to do that for 4 months. Next week, we get to start the process of regathering. Some of you will be here, some of you won't. I don't know how long this next season is going to last, but I'm hopeful that the same God who raised Jesus from the dead, who promises to raise us from the dead, who brings life from death, who has been bringing life out of this non-preferred season we've been in, we'll continue to do that. We'll continue to breathe life and create life and raise life out of this just difficult, unpredictable season that we're in and that we will continue to be in. But we'll be together. We'll be together. We will assemble and we'll continue to move toward assembling. I have been accused on a number of occasions of not being very pastoral. And I will say for the most part, those accusations are fair. If the mark or one of the marks of a pastor is the desire to be with his people, then I'm a pastor through and through. I miss you guys. And I am hopeful for the day we will all be back together assembling and that we'll be better positioned than we've ever been to invite other people to come and join us. We're going to finish our service this morning by taking communion together.
If you had questions during the message, text them to 567-246-0807 and we will address them during our next Facebook Live Q&A. For additional content, you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and check out our website, watervillecc.org. You can also watch our live stream service on YouTube every Sunday at 9 a.m. Eastern or replay it anytime. Thanks for listening.